I'm Cindy Paxton, and instead of reading the Bible, I had the Bible read to me. Well, I was very excited when I heard we were going to read through the Bible. It's something that I'd always really wanted to do. Having grown up in church all my life, it was something on my bucket list that I really would like to participate in. First, I started reading it, and after 3 or 4 days, got way behind. I would try to carve out, you know, the 15, 20, 30 minutes that it would take on some days to read the passages, and there was constant interruptions from either family or the phone or somebody, you know, coming to the door. So I chose to, when I saw the microphone at the bottom on my iPhone, I decided that that would be a better way for me. Having the Bible read to me in the mornings while I was getting dressed gave me a chance to be in His Word and, you know, think about what's going on ahead of me that day. Typically after, some days were shorter or longer than others in what we were reading, what the plan had for us. So, you know, I would just be in prayer, not necessarily bow my head and close my eyes type prayer, but just, you know, pray that, you know, oh, this is ahead of me today, or this is on my mind, or whatever. And it just gave me a sense of, it was a great way to start the day. You know, you could find other opportunities. It wouldn't necessarily have to be, you know, where I chose to do it. It could be on the treadmill, or it could be when you're taking a walk, or, you know, at night before you go to bed. It doesn't have to, you know, but consistency made it, to me, stick, and it helped to become part of my morning, you know, ritual. And I actually missed it when we were finished. I don't think I would have been able to have done it without the support and that kind of the accountability from Brad sometimes on Sunday when he was getting you to raise your hand to say if you had, were keeping up with it. So I think that helped.
This is kind of awkward. Yeah, it doesn't get better the longer you wait either. Let me start again. Good morning. Welcome to Cool Spring. We're really glad you're here this morning. If this is your first time with us, we're excited to have you, whether you're just visiting family this weekend or starting a New Year's resolution early, looking for a place to worship this year. We're excited that you're here. My name's Jesse. I work with students here, and I'm going to get to share with you for a few minutes this morning. And what I want to talk about is awkward silence, because you've all experienced it. You just did. But you've probably experienced it other than that as well, and you know from experience how uncomfortable it is when you find yourself in this moment, and it's just, well, it's awkward. Have you ever really thought about awkward silence, though? Like, what is it? Where does it come from? And where does it go? Because there's no getting rid of it. There's not like anything you can say that just makes it go away. I actually think that's a failing of our culture. We need an agreed upon standard phrase that you just like blurt out in that moment. And everyone knows it's okay now. But we don't have it because normally you say anything and you just make the situation worse. But have you ever really thought about it? Where does it come from? Where does it go? If you're having an awkward moment, could someone else be having one too? Like maybe there's only so many awkward moments in the world. And if you're having one, someone else can't. And then when it leaves you, it goes and haunts somebody else. And they just sort of exist out there in space somewhere, floating around. And I don't know. But there was a group that did some research about awkward silence. And they learned a good bit. And a couple years ago, Time Magazine ran an article highlighting what they found. The first thing that they came up with is they said, we have to understand what is this thing? What is it that between people or a group of people makes the silence not just silent, but awkwardly, uncomfortably silent? And what they decided to define it as is to say that it is and happens when both people feel as if the other should speak, and so neither one does. Makes sense? Both of you feel like the other one should say something, so neither of you does. But then they went on and they said, well, what is this like awkward feeling we get in that moment? And they found what is happening is that your body's anxiety levels are rising. Your feelings of rejection are rising. All the while, your self-confidence is plummeting. You see, what happens is you're standing there, and you feel like you just put out some nonverbal social cues that the other person should speak, and they're not saying anything. And so you feel like they're either rejecting you, or they missed your cues, and you're not doing a good job communicating. And now you start to feel nervous and inadequate, and so you start to feel small and less confident. Or maybe you start to think, well, maybe they seem to be waiting for me to speak. Maybe they put out nonverbal social cues that I should say something, and I'm missing them. Now I feel dumb. And my anxiety level goes up even more, and because my anxiety's up and now I feel like I should say something, I can't think of anything to say, and so the silence just continues, and it feels like an eternity, and all I can think to say is strawberries, and I know that won't make it better, so my brain stops me, and because there's nothing else to do but just walk away and hope it goes away. You know that moment? But have you ever thought about how long it takes to get there? See, this was the most fascinating part of what they did. They intentionally put people in awkward moments to see how long it took for it to turn uncomfortable. You know what they found? 4 seconds. That is all it takes for a moment to go awkward. See? If you don't believe me, have some fun this week. Someone is going to ask you something at some point. When they do, turn and look at them as if to say, I hear you, I acknowledge you, speak. And then count in your head, 1, 2, 3, 4. It will feel like an eternity for them. You will watch the panic set in on their face. Some of you going, I couldn't never do that to somebody. That is way too cruel. Some of you are like, I know what I'm doing. It's true, it will happen. That fast, you will see the transformation. And then when the 4 seconds are up, just look at them and say, strawberries. It'll get awkward all over again, and you can continue the fun. It's all it takes for it to set in. It does not take very much time at all. The thing about that is we don't like silence. It does not take long before we are uncomfortable with it. And it's more than just silence, though, in relationships I want to talk about. You see, I think more than just in relationships, there are moments in our lives that get kind of silent and quiet. And we don't like those either. And I bring that up this morning because I think for some of us, we are in one of those moments, this week between Christmas and New Year's. You see, for weeks, months for some of you, you have been building up anticipating and looking forward to Christmas. There has been special decorations and trees and events and family and cookies and candles and lights. We've talked about Advent every single Sunday for the past several weeks here at church. There's been special gatherings. There's been things to look forward to, all building up to this event, this moment. And hopefully your Christmas was wonderful and amazing and everything a Norman Rockwell painting should be. But now it's done, but it's not really done. How many of you, your tree is still up at your house? There are still some decorations hanging out, right? Not quite over. I mean, no point in taking those down and putting them away until you absolutely have to, which we generally agree is New Year's for most people. I mean, a new year, that's when we start a new thing. So no point in starting a new thing, but the last thing is kind of done, and now we're just sort of left in between. And it can get kind of silent, realizing that this thing you've been looking forward to is over. And life will go on. With all the problems, all the issues, all the concerns, all the have-to-dos and get-tos and things that are in your life that were there before we kind of put everything on hold for Christmas. And that can just feel a little bit uncomfortable. Or another time it happens is after vacation sometimes. You know, you've been looking forward to a vacation for a long time. There's just been a lot going on in your life, and and stressing you out, and you need a break, and you probably deserve it. You work hard, and so you go, and you have this great experience, and it's wonderful. And then you come home, and that feels good at first, too. You know, it's nice to be home again. It feels good to be back in familiar surroundings. But then there's this moment, usually on like a Sunday night, when you realize, in the morning, I have to go to school, work, life, and all the stuff I was hoping to get away from, all the stuff I was taking a break from, is going to be there waiting for me. As good as that vacation was, as good as that experience was, it did not solve the issues, the problems I face in my life. It did not fulfill every longing and every desire I have. And now on top of it all, I have this mountain of laundry to get to. Great. And those moments feel uncomfortable. And we don't like it when it's kind of quiet and still in between stuff. And so, just like with awkward silence, we just kind of try and endure and get through and move on to the next thing. Christmas is over, but New Year's is coming. And after that, there's some three-day weekends that happen with presidents and something else in the winter. I don't keep them straight ever. But then there's spring break, and that's good. And then there's summer vacation, and after that, we're pretty much back around to Thanksgiving and Christmas and anything else you can cram in there. And we race from one event, one activity, one experience to the next and the next and the next, hoping that maybe that one will be the one that will deal with the issues in our life, hoping that maybe that time it will finally answer the longings that we have. And those experiences, those activities, they're great. I love vacation and Christmas. But what if we're missing something by racing past the stillness and the silence that can happen afterwards? What if instead of racing to the next thing, we should take some time to embrace the quiet moments in between? And I say that this morning because of a guy named Elijah. See, Elijah's story is told in 1 Kings. It's in the part of the Bible we call the Old Testament. It happens long before Jesus ever comes on the scene. But in 1 Kings, it tells about Elijah's life. And Elijah's job was to be a prophet, which just means very simply that he shares God's messages with people. Which sounds like an awesome job, except God's messages that Elijah shared were generally not very positive at all. See, the people, when Elijah lived, did not worship Jehovah God like Elijah. Most of them worshiped this god named Baal, this idol called Baal. And so Elijah's messages were consistently to the people, stop worshiping this idol, Baal, and come and worship Jehovah God. And the people consistently said, no, thank you. We're good. And so Elijah always feels rejected. He always feels like what he's doing doesn't matter. Like no one is listening to him. And that is not a fun feeling to live with. But finally, one day, God enters into the picture again. And he says, Elijah, enough of this. We are going to settle this Baal thing once and for all. And I can think of no better way to settle this once and for all than to have a good old-fashioned throwdown, me and Baal, and we'll just show everybody who's powerful. Now, this sounds cool. This sounds promising. Elijah was all for this. Finally, everyone's going to see that what I've been saying is right, that God is powerful, that Baal is not. Don't worship Baal. Follow Jehovah God. This is perfect. Everyone will get it. Everyone will appreciate my message. Everyone will understand what I've been trying to say. This is like Christmas for Elijah. He's excited. In fact, everyone's excited. They all turn out to this mountaintop for the big event. The day comes and the place has been named and they come to this mountain and everyone gathers together. And Elijah says, here's how this is going to go down. There are 450 prophets for this Baal idol you all worship. And then there's me for Jehovah. We both worship the same way. We both build altars out of stone, these little tables. We both take animals, we weigh them on the altars, we set the sacrifice on fire as an offering to our God. We're going to do that today. You build an altar, I'll build an altar. You put an animal on it, I'll put an animal on it. But we're not going to set it on fire. Instead, we'll pray. And the God who answers from heaven with fire, he's God. He is powerful and he's in control, and we worship him. People say, sounds good to me. I mean, how many of us wouldn't want tangible, physical evidence from God that he is real and in control? At some point, you've probably said, my faith would be incredibly solid in God if he would just give me a physical sign. And if you're going to ask for a physical sign, I mean, fire from heaven, that's a pretty good one. That's got to be cool. So the stage is set, and Elijah says, okay, you go first. And so all of these prophets for Baal, they begin to cry out and dance and scream and pray to Baal. Nothing happens. They grow desperate and they begin to cut their arms with stones to show Baal how dedicated they are to him, and nothing happens. Now, if you're Elijah, this is going better than you could have possibly hoped, because you have 450 people running around looking incredibly ridiculous in front of an entire nation, illustrating what you've been trying to say. And so he does the only thing you could possibly do in that situation. He begins to mock them relentlessly. And he starts to tell them, you know, maybe if you just talked louder. Maybe Baal's asleep and you got to wake him up. Maybe he went on vacation. We should have rescheduled for next week when he's back in town. Nothing happens. And finally, Elijah says, enough. My turn. And he builds his altar and he lays the sacrifice out. And he steps up. You know what? Bring some water. Pour it on there. Do it again. And you know what? Just one more time. Until the whole thing is just drenched. And he steps up. And he prays very, very simply. That God would show that he is powerful. That there would be no doubt in anyone's mind that he alone is God. And he alone is worthy to be worshipped. That he alone should be followed. And fire falls from heaven and consumes the sacrifice. It consumes the stones of the altar. It consumes the water and the dust around the stones, and the people are in awe of what they just saw. God must be powerful. He must be the one who's in control, and so we should worship him and no one else. And they pledge that is exactly what they will do. This could not have gone better. Elijah probably could not have pictured a more perfect day than this. And so naturally the next morning he wakes up really depressed. And now his life is being threatened and he is on the run. Have you ever had an experience like that? Where you've been really looking forward to something and it came and it was everything you hoped it could be, and yet still somehow the next day, instead of just being giddy over what you experienced still, there's just sort of this nagging silence. Emptiness. Because yeah, but now it's over. And as good as it was, I still have issues and I still have problems and I still have concerns and there's still longings and desires within me that it didn't fulfill. And so what we do is we say, well, maybe another experience, maybe another event, another time. We'll take care of it, and we begin planning the next thing, and we look forward to it, and we build up to it, and then it happens all over again, and it gets silent, and we don't like it, and so we just keep going. But what if there's another way? You see, Elijah runs off, and he's done with events and trying. In fact, he's done altogether, and he says, you know what, God, this is just not working out. Life is actually not worth living at this point. Just let me die. No one likes me. Everybody hates me. No one listens to me. What's the point? He realizes if that didn't do it, if fire from heaven and the whole nation seeing this incredible event was not enough for me, then nothing will be. So just, I'm done. God sends Elijah some food. And Elijah begins to wander in the wilderness waiting for God to answer. And for 40 days, God is silent. You and I can hardly stand 4 seconds of silence before it gets awkward. Can you imagine 40 days silently waiting for God? That had to be so uncomfortable. That had to be so frustrating. And finally, after 40 days, God speaks and he says, Elijah, what are you doing here? And I'm not entirely sure after 40 days of silence from God, it mattered what God said. After 40 days of waiting, Elijah had some stuff he just needed to get off his chest. And he starts crying out to God again, God, what's the point? No one listens to me. I am the only one left who serves you. No one cares about you but me. No one is getting anywhere with this thing. I'm done. I'm frustrated. I am fed up. These problems are never going to go away. Sometimes we can relate to that experience. God, what's the point? Then it says in 1 Kings 19 that God speaks again. It says, and he said, go out and stand on the mount before the Lord. And behold, the Lord passed by, and a great and strong wind tore the mountains and broke in pieces the rocks before the Lord. But the Lord was not in the wind. And after the wind, an earthquake, but the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake, a fire, but the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire, the sound of a low whisper. And when Elijah heard it, he wrapped his face in his cloak and went out and stood at the entrance of the cave. And behold, there came a voice to him and said, what are you doing here, Elijah? As if fire from heaven wasn't enough, Elijah goes out and sees even more incredible physical evidences of God. Wind that can shatter rock, an earthquake that shakes the mountain, and fire moving across this rocky desert mountain. These had to be incredible experiences. And that's exactly the point. For as incredible as all these experiences were, God was not in them. And you see, sometimes that is the only place we feel that we can look for God, is in an experience. We feel that if we have just the right mood in worship, or just the right event, or Christmas goes just so, or everything works out, or the vacation is just planned perfectly enough, then everything will fall together and life will be okay and everything will be happy and I will be at peace. And it's as if God is saying, Elijah, I can make an experience out of anything. Wind, earthquakes, fires, these are no big deal for me to pull together. It was not hard for me to send fire from heaven and light that sacrifice. And as much as you would like to think that experiences like that would leave your faith unshakable, I'm not sure it would. Instead, there is this thin silence. This moment that almost you're afraid to speak because it might end it. And God is in that. And Elijah goes out and he realizes he is before the Lord in this quiet moment. And in this quiet moment, Elijah and God begin to talk. And what God says to Elijah is that, Elijah, you are not alone. There are still people who follow me. Elijah, I still have work for you to do, and the work you are doing is not meaningless. I'm going to use you to accomplish something, and I have a plan for you because you matter to me. I want to use you, even though you're not alone, even though I could use other people. I'm choosing to send you. You know, I can't think of anything I would rather hear from God than that. when we get in those quiet moments, I think the reason we race past them is because those are the places where we start to be honest with ourselves about the things that really trouble us and about the things we really long to know. Do I really matter? Is what I'm doing important? Do people care? Am I alone? And those are uncomfortable questions to ask and wrestle with. And so the easiest thing to do is to move on to the next activity, the next event, the next thing. But what if we're missing it? What if right there in that quiet is when God is waiting to speak to us, to encourage us, to tell us how loved we are? Because that's where it was for Elijah. For all the events, for all the things God did through him, and for everything he saw happen, it seems the moment he's most encouraged, the moment he's most at peace, is in this quiet stillness with God. He had to endure 40 days of silence to get there. But man, it was worth it. So what about us? Could it be that we are missing out on what God is trying to say to us because we are so busy racing through life from one thing to the next to the next? Not that those things are bad or we can't learn anything in them, but what if we stopped afterwards and embraced the silence that can follow? What if we looked for places intentionally to be quiet and listen to what God had to say? And so I want to challenge you this morning. Before we start a new year and you take on new activities and new challenges and reading through the Bible in an entire year, and whatever else you may have planned, take some time to be quiet and listen to what God has to say. Maybe he wants to alter your plans. Maybe he has better plans for you. Maybe before you dive into something else, there are some things in your life that are just not right, and it may be a little uncomfortable to hear, but you need to know before you go forward. Maybe he just wants to encourage you. So I want to encourage you to find a space this week and do this. And it will take some work, I can tell you. Because there is nowhere naturally in our lives that it is just quiet. We are filled and surrounded with noise and sound. From the moment we get in the car and turn on the radio to coming home and the TV is on and people are around. And there is always something coming at us, and you will have to work to find a quiet space. And when you do, it will take more than 4 seconds. And so you will start to feel uncomfortable and kind of awkward about it. I don't know how long it will take. 4 minutes? 4 hours? Maybe you'll need to spend some time over 4 days before you start to hear from God. All I know is that it is always worth it to take time to be still and to listen. Because I can tell you from experience, no matter what he has to say, whether it is that you need to let go of some things, to embrace some new challenges, even if it sounds scary or uncomfortable, I have never left a time silently before God, listening to what he had to say and not felt encouraged. And we all need to feel encouraged. So what would it look like for you to be still, to be silent, and to let God speak? Would you pray with me? Father, thank you so much for your love. God, I pray this morning that you would forgive us for the noise we have filled our lives with. God, it was not intentional to drown you out, but somewhere along the way, we did. And we know that hurts you, so God, we're sorry. God, we acknowledge that we are uncomfortable with silence. And so we ask for strength to endure, knowing that it is worth it. God, we ask for patience because we don't like to wait. And hearing from you requires waiting and being still. So God, just calm our hearts long enough that we can sit, be still, and hear from you. And then God, speak to us. Give us courage to do the things you tell us to do. God, and let us leave encouraged, knowing that you care for us, that we matter, that you have a plan and a place for us. So God, we are thankful for what you're going to do in our lives. Jesus, we love you. It's your name we pray. Amen. Just a second, we're going to stand and respond in worship to what God said. As we do, I'd encourage you to start to think, maybe where is a time that I can find to be silent? If you don't plan for it, it won't happen. Maybe you realize that you need a place like this to come and keep you accountable to these things, and you've been looking for somewhere, and you need to come and say, this is where I want to connect. This is where I want to be linked in this year, to help grow and learn more about God and his love for me. Maybe you already know, if you were to get alone and silent with God, there are some things in your life that he is going to tell you are not lining up with what he has for you. And maybe before you even go and you sit quietly before him, you just need to start by pouring some things out and saying, God, I realize this is not what you have for me. And then if you're willing to confess and say, God, I'm going to follow you. Not these other things that are worthless, but I realize that you are powerful and I need to hear from you. Whatever it is God's saying, we just want to take a minute to let him speak as we respond. So would you stand and worship with me?